Hi there. Welcome to On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and this is a podcast about work. Each episode, I talk with someone about how they do work, how they feel about it, and how it relates to the rest of their life. Today, I'm talking with Bradley Meyer. Brad is an audio director, sound designer, and general audio guru. More importantly, Brad is one of the few people in the world who answers the phone when I call, both figuratively and literally. Bradley Meyer, welcome to On Work.
Joel G, it's an honor to be here.
Great. It's nice to see you, Brad. So I have this idea that the first job or jobs that you get like set you on a path and are more important than one might think. And one of the first jobs that I had was like my cross-country coach had gotten me a job working at the high school in the evenings, like supporting junior college classes. I would go around open rooms, move around AV, get supplies and stuff. And I think that like then a lot of my later jobs related to that. And I'm wondering, what is one of your first jobs in audio and how did you get it?
Well, I guess my first job in audio was really my first job as a sound designer and a sound designer in video games. So if you want to like kind of dig further back, my first job in gaming was at Chuck E. Cheese when I was 15 years old. And I got hired as a game room technician there, which basically meant I would walk around and give people tokens if things were broken and bust kids for cheating and just generally fiddle around pretending like I knew what I was doing in the arcade machines that we had. So that was, I guess, my first. Oh, and we also had to like sing and dance. So, you know,
Oh, for
there's
like happy
a
birthday?
little bit of, for birthdays. And then we also had this thing called live shows where, you know, we'd all have to go like dance and stuff with Chucky and, so I guess that was
How did you
both
get that
my
job?
I applied. it is kind of the job that all 15-year-olds can do if they just go and apply and and you want to make minimum wage for dealing with a lot of dirty children and their really annoying parents.
But you could have applied for McDonald's or like some other something like you chose Chuck E.
Yeah,
Cheese.
so I chose Chuck E. Cheese because my brother had worked there. And also it was like, I mean, he was also a game room technician. So I was, following the family legacy. But really it was like he would come home with all like he had a shoebox full of tokens. And having unlimited tokens to like play arcade games was kind of a dream
Was
as
it
a kid.
fun?
So
did you enjoy the work?
I made it fun. Like I enjoyed my coworkers, but I would also just entertain myself by doing stupid things. Like, I had to wash the floors a lot. And so rather than like get on my hands and knees with a rag, I would actually tie rags to my shoes and just spray the floor and like skate along the floor and
Classic
clean it.
Brad.
Or I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
I've been the same person
Yeah.
my whole life. I just
Yeah. Is that right? You've been the same person your whole life, you think?
I believe so.
Yeah.
My DNA tests have proven that.
So that was your first job in gaming?
That was, my first
And
job
did
in
it lead to
gaming.
another job in gaming?
No. Well, no, it that did not. But after that, I was I went to college after that and kind of had been interested in media and ended up choosing media studies kind of as my major in college and didn't know what I wanted to do, but was so interested in that I started working for TV stations. It was doing internships, so not
In the
getting
Bay
paid
Area?
and just in San Diego and then in the Bay Area. So I worked at like the ABC affiliate in San Diego one summer. And, I was an intern, so I was doing grunt work like, stuff all of these mailers to all of these people. But then I also got to do what I thought at the time was really fun stuff, like writing the kind of two sentence blurb that they would then say on the news, like next on Oprah, husbands who hate their wives' hair, or whatever it was. So I thought that was really cool to like, watch the news that night and hear this thing that I wrote, even if it was completely trite. And then to actually kind of tie this into how I ended up getting my first job in what has now been my career for the last 28 years, is I got to shadow people And so I shadowed this editor one day because I thought that editing was just fascinating. And I didn't know much about it, but I thought it was interesting. I got to like sit in the control room, and that was just like this amazing mecca of knobs and switches and buttons. And it was fascinating. So I got to talk to this editor one day, and I asked him how he got his job, and he told me, oh, I lied. They were interviewing, and I told them I knew how to use this editing machine, and I happened to have a friend that worked at the studio, so he let me in that night, and I taught it to myself. And that's basically exactly how I got my first job as a sound designer, is I lied and told them I knew what I was doing, and they offered me the job, and then I kind of taught myself after I got hired.
Yeah, it's just either software or hardware. It's just a tool to learn, and because you right, is that
I mean, yes and no. I feel I was exceptionally lucky. Well, I've been exceptionally lucky my entire life, but in that specific instance, the reason that they chose to hire me is that they had just fired their sound designer because he stopped coming to work 6 months before. And so as a result, they had basically contracted out all of their sound work for the next 6 months. So I kind of had this like
Oh,
6 month pocket to
buffer.
lock
Yeah.
myself in my room and
Yeah.
teach myself everything I could.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like the imposter syndrome was real. Like I knew I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was still a really obstinate, entitled young white dude. But I also like knew like I'm in way over my head and I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And that imposter syndrome has never gone away. I mean, I look back on my career now and wow, I've been really successful, but I still, I mean, I'm actually mixing a video game right now and I will still be in that room being like, what the heck am I doing here? Like, they're
Yeah.
gonna find out someday. They're gonna
Yeah.
know.
Yeah. I've seen videos you've made of you, maybe with the last time you did this audio recording thing and the team, and I've seen you in the room, like you were making videos I watched, and what I see is someone who's just like comfortable and confident. That's what the videos that I saw of you doing this job show.
Well, you got to at least pretend, right?
I
No,
guess. Yeah.
I mean, again, it's been 27, 28 years,
Yeah.
so there is a level of comfort that has developed over that time, but there is still those moments of like, am I messing things up? Do I really know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
There are people way smarter and way more talented than me. What am I doing here?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Do you think it's a dream job or a dream career?
Absolutely. Like, I work harder than I should, and there's no way I would if I didn't love it. And it is so much fun. And just the level of creativity that I get to kind of exhibit on a daily basis, the kind of the challenges, the problem solving, the also just working on a creative project like I am fortunate enough to do, with a talented group of people, and bringing that from conception to completion is such an amazing process. I mean, I know you do art, and a lot of us do art, and we usually, when we do art, it's in a very kind of solitary kind of construct. Oh, I'm taking pictures, and then maybe I'll publish them, or I'm writing a song by myself. But the more people you add, kind of almost the more gratifying it becomes, because it becomes more collaborative. If you're in a band, then oh, cool, maybe I'm making this thing with two or three or four other people. When you're making a video game, that can be 30, 80, 100, 200, 300 people that you're working with. And we're small enough where you really get to collaborate closely with people and kind of make really kind of fun, interesting decisions together. And yeah, that part is a large part of why I love what I'm doing, and I feel like I'm able to keep doing it.
You sound very positive and very rah-rah about it and very like I don't know, like a little storybookish about it, or a little like cookie cutter about it in some sense, you know? And I wonder, like, not cookie cutter, but just like, I don't know. So clearly, you know, it's a good team effort and everything. I wonder, like, do you think you would feel the same if it was different work? Like, if you ended up, like, if you didn't have this particular work, is it because the work aligns with your interest, or is it more just because your general way of interacting with work?
Great question. And it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I have been kind of I have been obsessed with audio since I was, 5 years old at the latest. I mean, the first job I ever wanted was to be a rock star. And my first song that I wrote, I was probably 6 or 7, and it was a song called Rock Idol because I also wanted to be an archaeologist. So it was a song about a guy
nice,
who was an
nice, Brad.
archaeologist and a rock star. It's kind of like Buckaroo Banzai around that same time, I guess. But yeah, so I've always been fascinated with audio. I never thought it could be my career. And the fact that it has been a career and has been my only career really is kind of astounding to me. And I mean, yeah, I think I could definitely enjoy collaborative work elsewhere, but looking at what most people do, I mean, it can be fulfilling, but it can also just be mindless and brainless. And I mean, yeah, I work for a corporation, and yes, I work on video games, which is not really doing a ton, to help society or to, further any kind of efforts of humanity. But it is rewarding to me, at least, in that I am fortunate enough in that I love what I do. And it's gotten to the point, I used to have moral quandaries of making video games and rotting kids' brains. And over the years, having talked to fans and received fan mail and things like that, and actually kind of understood how much these products that we've made had helped people through hard times, has been really inspiring and kind of shifted my thinking about, my perception and belief of what video games are very different from people who they actually do help. So that does make it fulfilling in a way that I never really expected it to.
I think also when you talk about like doing good in the world or not doing good in the world, like I think you can do good in the world just like individually, like by being a good person in the office. Like when you go to work and you lead a team or you're on a team and like the, you know, just the way you impact with other people or react or relate to other people,
Yeah, I
can make the
totally
world a better
agree. And
place.
it's, I mean, a large part of my work now is there are aspects of it that I still get to be creative, but that's kind of the exception. I started as a sound designer, so my whole job was just make sound effects and be creative. And now I'm much more of a manager and a director, so that I am supporting my team rather than kind of doing most of the work. And I've
I had an aha about that recently, where I've always considered myself like I want to be a creator, a designer, a maker of things. And lately, I'm like, I'd kind of rather like have a larger vision and like help the achieve it for the greater goal of the organization, whatever. And I wonder if like if you've come into this managerial role like happily, or you know, if it's like something that like but you can find joy in that as well.
I mean, now absolutely, but for the first several years, I think that I was, at least for the first couple years, that I was an audio director, that I was a director actually managing people. It was definitely something I never wanted. I loved being a designer, and I loved just the creativity of just trying to sculpt something from nothing and recording things and smash them together to make something new. And I was kind of just forced into it, I guess, for lack of a better term, of like, oh, we need somebody to lead this project. I have the most qualified experience, I guess, so that's what I'll start doing. And I didn't expect to enjoy it because I was like, oh, that means I don't get any creativity and I'm just this pencil pusher or whatever. And I really managed really until about 4 years ago or so to really kind of balance the kind of managerial part and the design part, and do both. And it was really on my last project that it was I finally came to the realization of I don't have time and brain space to do both because I was killing myself and working, 16-hour days, 7 days a week for months on end because I had too much of the ownership of all these things on me rather than delegating it out to my team and just focusing on the high level. And I still do a little bit of that, but I definitely feel like I've kind of delegated much better on my current project. And as a result, kind of have been focusing more on helping my team develop their skills and just supporting them and mentoring them and doing those kinds of things. And yeah, I've found it very rewarding.
What do you think about when you're in those crunch periods when you are working the very long weeks? Like how, in a crunch period, like how many hours a week is that?
So for me, it's probably 60 to 80.
60 to 80. And then so like when you're in that, like, I mean, you have motivation to do it and it's like it's enjoyable, or you're like stressed out and it's hard on your other relationships, or you feel like you're missing out on your fitness or other things, or you're just like, how do you live at that time? Like, how is your attitude or during those periods?
My attitude is always fairly positive. I don't think I could do it otherwise. And it's also, it's, again, that also kind of bleeds into the kind of manager, director, kind of lead level position of, I'm not just in charge of my team, but I'm also kind of responsible for morale, both within my team and kind of outside of my team as well. If you reflect a positive attitude, that becomes infectious and other people kind of can lighten their mood as well. And so I don't love working 60, 70 hour weeks, but it's also sometimes a very magical time. There's also something to be said, as weird as it is, there's something to be said of just kind of the mania of it. Like maybe it's not healthy, but it is really fun. And it actually, especially there's mo most people at my job do not work those kinds of hours. Like we try to keep people at like, hey, if we're crunching, which is 6 weeks at a time, no more than try not to work more than 50 hours. Like that's all we want. I kind of take more on because, again, I'm manager, I'm a lead, and I want things to be as good as they can. But there's a small group of us that kind of have that work ethic, and there is this level of kind of delirium that just makes it even more fun because you just get really wacky and goofy, and I'm kind of naturally like that, but it just kind of amplifies itself and, so yeah, it's I think the prolonged aspect of it can be really hard. I did work a very prolonged kind of period of that recently, and it was getting really hard towards the end. But it's like anything, kind of ebbs and flows, and so my mood would most often be very positive, and then some days you just have a really bad day, or you just keep falling further and further behind over the course of a week, and it's just you feel so demoralized, and is this one going to be okay, or is this going to be a complete disaster? But,
Well, for sure. I imagine even with like a dream job, there are like days that aren't good and things are difficult and problems
absolutely.
arise.
Today, actually, today was a really frustrating day for me, and we just had some technical issues. I accidentally crashed the entire game because I was not careful about the way I did something. And it was just a really slow day. We didn't get through the amount of content we wanted, all those things. And it was just like, God, it's so shitty. Is it going to get better? And you know what? It was just a day. Tomorrow will be better. So it's also a matter of that, of just, I think that's just a good kind of life lesson or just a way to be is
So positive.
you just can't get hung up. I mean, I think I mean, the rule that I learned as a kid from my dad, which I try to adhere to, even though it's easy to forget it, is don't sweat the small stuff, and everything is small stuff. It's just, and especially when I look at this, I mean, I work on video games. Like, I'm making games for a living. It's not that serious. It's not rocket science. I'm not solving global problems. Granted, I am, responsible for a big chunk of, $150 million project or something like that. So if it fails, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. But I think that that is a wider issue spread across a lot of people. And at least within our studio, we're very smart about how we operate to try to ensure that that kind of colossal failure doesn't happen.
I think that like don't sweat the small stuff is something I often expect of like my management and my company. I'm like, they're always like, I'm like, no one's gonna die. You know, it's just like making an HR training, you know, like you don't need to be like contacting people at 11 o'clock at night or whatever. Not that that happens, but like, you know what I mean? Like but then like I'd say that about them, but then personally I get all wrapped up like in some stupid little like Kahoot quiz I was making today or something, you know, and just like, oh, I gotta get it done, you know.
No.
So
Well, I mean, that's definitely something that I, again, try to impress on my employees is like, this is not a big deal. Like, don't kill yourself on this. Don't stress out about this. It's going to be fine. Just do the best you can. And that's all we need.
all right, Brad, so we're going to take a quick break right here, and we're going to be back after this message from our sponsor. Are you satisfied with your life? Happy with your job, your relationships, your finances? Well, we've got just the thing for you. What is it? I want it! Is a lifestyle adaptogen designed in California that seamlessly integrates into your feeds. What is it? I want it! Learns what's going well for you and focuses on finding something better. Also consider bundling with What's That Over There? And Shiny Baubles. Who wants to be happy, satisfied, and content when you can be desiring, wanting, and craving? What is it? I want it. Sign up now and find out what you've been missing. Side effects reported by 100% of users include disappointment, loss of hair, crying in the shower, hypertension, twitchy eye, leaky plumbing, back pain, achy joints, and diarrhea. We're back. If you've totally spaced out and forgotten what you're listening to, this is On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. And today, my guest is Bradley Meyer, audio genius and one of my best friends. Thank you again for being here, Brad.
Thank you for having me, Joel. I am definitely not a genius, but I
Well,
appreciate you putting that on me.
you appear to be one. You play one on TV. So, you've
Yeah.
worked on a video game that I think has a decent fan base, Ghost of Tsushima. Is that right? Ghost of Tsushima? And if a fan of that game happened to be listening to this podcast, what is something that you could talk about the sound design or of that game or the audio of that game that would be interesting for them?
Oh, man, there's so much. Jeez. There's a lot of getting into the weeds because a lot of it is technical.
Yeah, but they're a fan. They play the game. They might have a question for you. What might they want to know more about, or what might be interesting for them to know about the gameplay or the sound of the game?
Okay, well, here's one, and this has been mentioned in other podcasts. I'm sorry, Joel, you're not the first podcast I've been on,
That's okay.
but I went to Japan and recorded a lot of the wildlife for both Ghost of Tsushima and our new game, Ghost of Yote, and so recorded lots and lots of animals, and Ghost of Tsushima. We decided we were going to have a few new species of birds pretty late in the project, and I couldn't go back to Japan to record. We didn't have budget to hire somebody else to go record for us. So the way that I added these birds is I found recordings of those birds online, and I pitched them way down, like 4 octaves down, so they were super slow and they sounded really crazy. And then I basically recorded myself performing these slowed down bird calls. And then I took my recording and sped it back up. And those are the birds of
Oh.
those certain species as they are in game.
You learned the bird calls at a slow speed. You learned how to
I
perform them.
didn't, yeah, I mean, I basically was just trying my best to mimic them, slowed way down so that they were close enough approximations once they were sped back up.
Where did that idea come from?
So I'm on a Slack channel with a whole bunch of field recordists, and we do these like kind of crowdsource libraries like every month. And 1 month we were doing birds. And so, usually it's just like, oh, cool, we're field recordists, we go out and record. And then the whole deal is you go, you record, you catalog what you've recorded, and then we all share them, and then we all have this beautiful library of all these, whatever the category is that month. So we were doing birds 1 month, and then somebody, and I can't remember who, but one of the field recordists on the Slack channel was like, hey, has anybody ever tried this? And everyone's like, no, that's a great idea. And so that was kind of the impetus of like, I cannot get these birds. I don't, there's no library to, purchase for these species. Well, what if I try this? And yeah, it worked.
That's cool. That's kind of like I've heard people like maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson or other space people say in movies they want like the stars to be right, or people want to hear the right birds in the right geographical locations. But it kind of leads me to another question I'm interested in, and well, something that freaks me out is AI. If I look at the news about AI too closely, like I could have a panic attack, or it could add to a panic attack. I don't have full-on panic attacks, but that sort of just like. And so I think that don't tell my bosses, but AI could, do a fair bit of my job, and I certainly use it as a tool. And I do know that there are I have done voiceover at work, and I do know that now we have an AI tool that does voiceover instead of me, and it's easier. You just type it in, and when you have an update, you just type in the new update and it spits it out. And I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't know listening to a training that has an AI voice. And so I'm wondering, what do you think about AI in the future and work?
I mean, it's definitely a unique time to be in anything tech related. There is definitely kind of hearing some of the newer voiceover models is a concern. And I mean, there was just a strike that just got resolved from the Screen Actors Guild specifically for video games. And the main sticking point and the reason that the strike went on for as long as it did was because the actors were, rightfully requesting protections from AI. Because as you said, it's not just that, oh, you can just, have AI say things for you and it sounds believable, but with less and less data, you can just clone somebody's voice. And so, you could take a very famous actor, and just with a couple minutes of their voice now, you can replicate them. And the models are getting so sophisticated that you can also replicate not just them speaking, but different projection and exertion levels. So you can have them shouting or whispering or being angry or happy or sad. So the technology, it's still not, in my mind, it is generally not at a shippable quality yet for what we do, but it's very close, and the kind of rate at which the improvements are happening continues to accelerate. Not getting into the amount of resources that AI development and model generation uses, because that's a wholly separate issue
But
that
nobody, but that no business really cares about that.
No business cares about that. And as most businesses have shown, they don't care about the ethics of it either. I mean, OpenAI and Meta and Google,
But
their
why should they care
entire,
about the ethics of it?
because they're stealing to train their models. And, but they don't
There you
care.
go. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
those three companies, especially, but all of them really. I mean, don't get me started on Twitch or Amazon, anybody. Their whole AI model is based on stealing everything they can to train their models, rather than, making sure that their data is ethically sourced. And that's a whole separate issue. I mean, there is music generation is another one where AI models are continually trying to improve music generation, but most of those models are stealing music. Google has one and they're just scraping
Well, they're all
YouTube.
stealing
They're
by default.
stealing.
That's the only way that they can become what they are.
Yeah, unless you do things ethically. And that is one thing I appreciate about where I work, because they are very interested in AI research, but they're also very adamant about doing it ethically and making sure that they have, artists signing off before they, start scraping their data.
But
And
beyond
I
like the
don't think.
ethical part of this creating it, like there's the going forward where like, that's just going to happen. There's going to be this unethical creation of the AI, whatever the models, and then going forward it will just be coming for jobs. Your people on your team will be replaced with not people.
So that is a distinct probability. That is a very relevant fear. The way that we are trying to position AI for at least within my organization is we don't want AI to replace people. We want AI to handle the tedious work that we have to do.
Slippery
So
slope,
that we can
Brad. Slippery
focus,
slope.
absolutely, absolutely. But that to me, that is the kind of the dream is let it take care of the tedious work so that we can focus on
For
the creative
sure.
work.
For
Now,
sure.
that's also related if, hey, I'm in a creative industry, so that's what I want. There are a lot of people who are like, well, I mean, I'm just, punching numbers or doing simulations or, doing things that, oh,
Coding.
the AI can do it. You don't need it.
Yeah.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's been plenty of stories coming out just over the past few months of, yeah, sure, AI can write code for you, but it can also mess everything up for you. And, it can delete your whole depot of your entire code base. It can just throw it away because it felt like it. And you're like, well, I didn't tell you to do that. Well, I did, so it's, it is going to be very fascinating to see how things kind of play out over the next couple years, few years. I don't think that there is anybody at a executive level, i.e. in the government, who gives a damn about workers or humans or any kind of rights. So it could end up being a very dark time. I know that there are a lot of artists and people that are going to do everything they can to fight to kind of maintain the creative rights that people have enjoyed for the last 150 years.
You'll always need someone at Chuck E. Cheese to go collect the tokens and stuff and clean off
Oh
the
man, I think you could definitely automate those
dolls.
processes. And also they got rid of the animatronics,
Oh, did
so
they? Oh, that's sad. That's sad. Well, Brad, I've got like a sort of final question here for you. And I'm wondering, is there something new in your life, a habit, an idea, or an insight that's making things better for you? Something that you've tried recently, maybe, or something you've become aware of that's improved your life, like physically, mentally, otherwise?
You mentioned before, oh, how has when you have had to work way too much, how has that affected your health? And even though I've worked maybe the second hardest I've ever worked in my career on this current project that I'm finishing, I definitely made room for myself to maintain my health. And I've been eating healthier, but more importantly, I've maintained my exercise kind of routine throughout this. So yes, I'm working way more than I would like, but I'm always setting aside time to do my workout regimen. And that has been huge. I think exercise is a really important thing for both mental and physical health. It helps your attitude, it helps your energy, it helps you stay healthy and alive. And so I think that has been a huge thing for me, for the past, however long I've been doing it, and especially for the past, 6 or 8 months when work was a little difficult, just to be able to maintain that, and I feel like that's also helped keep my sanity.
That's a big deal because oftentimes when life gets stressful or difficult, oftentimes we just like, I can't do my workout today. It's been too hard. So that's a big deal that you've managed to
I mean,
incorporate it.
yeah, that had always been my MO. And then on my last project, when things got really tough, it was just like, oh, I just don't have time. And that kind of, I didn't allow that excuse this time. It was just like, I have to have time. Like, this is something I have to do. This isn't just routine. This is habit. And it's a habit that I have to keep. I think, on my last project too, we also had the the wonders of the pandemic hit as well. And so that also just kind of threw everything out the window. You know, it was just, okay, well, now not only am I working too much, and so now I can't go to the gym anymore, and I'm drinking too much, and I'm eating unhealthily, and you know, that kind of was a really vicious cycle. And you know, I think taking care of yourself, and taking care of your health is key to just kind of maintaining a healthy lifestyle and a healthy mental state.
Awesome. Thank you for being here, Brad.
Thank you for having me, because it's always an honor to talk to you, Joel. We have great conversations, and I always enjoy just chatting.
Thank you for being on the podcast, Brad. It's been a little challenging getting to people, and I appreciate that. Like, I mean, when I say at the beginning, like, you actually answer the phone when I call, like, you are there for me, and you do show up, and like, you are doing this, and I really appreciate it. So that's it for today's conversation. Thanks again to Bradley for being here, and thank you so much for listening. This has been On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. Music credit, Life is Good by Beat Mechanic from the Free Music Archive, used under Creative Commons license. Additional emotional support from pets like Kathmandu, Everest, Abigail, and Mabel. That's all for this episode. Be present, keep going, look up, and take care.